Okay, today's daf brought to you from Yerushalayim Yir HaKodesh is daf Kuf Nun Hey. We're holding at the Halakha Mishnah. Until now, we've been talking about various dinim of behema in terms of mechamer and the din of yonuach behemtecha. Now we're talking about what we can do when we need to work for the behema in order to prepare food on Shabbos. What are you allowed to do? Matirin pikiyei amir lifnei behema. You're allowed to untie these bundles of straw in front of an animal, and you can also scatter kipin. Now, it's not clear what kipin are. Scatter seems to mean that when the straw, whatever it is you're feeding, is tight together, you can spread it out in order to make it more delicious. It also, it smells better that way, and it's easier to eat. Avlo et hazirin. You would not be allowed to do that for zirin, whatever that is. We'll see. It's a machlokas in the Gemara. Ein maraskin lo et hashachat v'lo et hacharuvin lifnei habehema. You're not allowed to shred up shachat, as we saw, was talking about tfuah, that was processed a number of times before it reached its full maturity, three times even, and then it would grow to its full size right at the end of the season for human use. And the earlier ones were used in order to feed an animal. And you're not allowed to cut that up. Not that, and not charuvim, which are carrots. Now, obviously, it's not clear here. Are they edible? Are they hard? Are they soft? All of this we're going to see. And this is whether it's in front of a daka or a gasa, whether it's in front of a small or large animal, apparently, is what it means. And Rabbi Yehuda says, well, you're allowed to take charuvim, which are carrots. You're allowed to cut that up for a small animal. That's what it seems to be saying. We're going to see we're running into a lot of problems in understanding the mission. So first of all, let's decide what the definitions are of the piki'in and the kipin. Are they different types of foods? Or are they different types of packaging? So Amar Rav Huna, the truth is piki'in and kipin are exactly the same type of food. We're talking about some type of straw that the animal could eat. And it's only a question of how they're packaged. Piki'in are tied twice. Kipin are tied tighter, and they're tied three times. But where it's talking about zirin, now zirin is referring to things that are basically not really edible unless they're spread out, because that's talking about thin branches of eras, of a type of cedar. And because of that, normally people will use this for fuel when it dries out. But the question over here is, if I untie it while it's still fresh, so animals would be able to eat it. And the din would be, therefore, let's read the Mishnah now with those definitions, which we'll see not everybody agrees to. So according to the way Rav Huna understands it, the Mishnah is saying like this. You're allowed to untie these double-bound packages of straw, and you can even, if you want to, spread out the straw. And the same exact thing would be true about triple tied bundles. But you cannot do that for the cedar, for the zirin. Neither of the above. You cannot spread it out. You cannot untie it. So the point over here would be, says Rav Chista, I'll explain it to you. It's very simple. My time at Rav Huna. Rav Huna holds, once something is a food that is suitable for the animal, you are allowed to do things for it to make it more comfortable for the animal to eat. And therefore, the mitrach ba'uchlin tarchina, you can spread it out, untie it, obviously, but even spread it out to make it more accessible and to make it more delicious. But you cannot go and take something that is not currently a food and make it into a food. So because of that, you cannot take the packages of erez, which normally would not be roy to eat because they, until they're spread out, they get a little bit of air in them and they start smelling more like food. Animal won't even eat it. So the shavuye yuchla lo mashvina, to take something that is normally a fuel, even though it wasn't miyuchat for a fuel, but basically to make it into a food now, that you're not allowed to do. That's Rav Huna's shita, according to Rav Chista. Rav Yehuda, not to be confused with Rebbe Yehuda in the Mishnah, obviously was a machlokas in the Mishnah proper, the last part of the Mishnah, but Rav Yehuda the Amora argues with Rav Huna And he gives a different definition to the Pekiyin and the Zirin, and according to that, we're going to have a completely different chat in the Mishnah, which is almost a mirror image, because what he holds is that he named Pekiyin, he named Zirin. On the contrary, the Pekiyin and the Zirin are the same. Pekiyin are the twice tied, and the Zirin are the thrice tied. But the Kippin are the ones that are the Erez. And so what the Mishnah is saying is exactly the opposite. The Mishnah is saying you can untie the Pekiyin, which is straw, but you're not allowed to spread it out because it doesn't really need you to spread it out. It's already food, and therefore for you to do a tircha b'alma in order to make things more comfortable or more tasty for an animal, you're not allowed to be a matriach. But when it comes to the Zirin, that's different. The Kippin also, you can't do anything different with the Kippin. You can untie them, but there you're also allowed on the Kippin, you're allowed to even spread them out because they're tied too tightly, and because of that they need spreading before Mashenkin. The Zirin, when it comes to the Zirin, which are tied three times, over there, all you're allowed to do is do the same thing when it comes to being matir, but you cannot do the same things to be mafasfes, because according to him, even though you can untie straw, but you don't need to actually spread the straw out, even if it's tied tightly. The only thing that you can spread out is the eres, because eres, if it's tied tightly, it's not even food yet. And so he holds just the opposite, as Rava points out. My time in Rav Yehuda, he holds that on the contrary. Rav Yehuda says, look, if the animal needs to eat, so then you can prepare food for it. So this is preparing food. You're allowed to do it. But why should you be toreach on something that already is food when it can eat it perfectly well without it? And you're not allowed to do a tircha just to make life easier for your animal. Tanakh. Now it says in the Mishnah what appears to be something that does not work out according to Rav Huna. Because let's read on in the Mishnah. The Mishnah talks about what the din would be with carob and what the din would be with shachat. Shachat again was the early cut grains. And it says over there, you're not allowed to cut it up before the animal. It doesn't matter whether we're talking about a Behema Daka or a Behema Gasa. Now, I'm assuming that the way in which we're given a key into understanding what type of foods we're talking about is that when we're talking about the charuvim here, they're the type of charuvim that would be similar to shachas. In other words, charuvim could be the kind of stuff that they give out in the day schools on carob for Lag BaOmer, which is completely unedible, as it's totally dried out. Or charuvim could be this nice, delicious, fresh carrot, like grows in front of...
Tu B'Shvat.
Thank you. Like grows in front of Barnea's cave. So that's the question. Which kind is it? So now what we're assuming is that shachas can never get as hard as caribs, right? So we're assuming that the shachas is sort of fresh, and that what we're saying is that just like the shachas is given over here as a sign that we're talking about something soft, so just like the shachas is rechichi, the charuvim are also rechichi, okay? But the Mishnah is saying that you cannot cut them up. Now, why can't you cut them up? They're perfectly edible as they are, and that would mean, I'll leave it to Rabbi Yehuda, there should be no problem in cutting them up, because he understands, on the contrary, the heter is for things that you're already are food and you just need to make them more accessible. So it appears from here that Alma lo tachinen ba'ochlin, you're not allowed to do a tircha for something that already is an eichlin. Certainly shachas is already an eichlin, and certainly charuvim is certainly an eichlin, which is a tiyuf to the ravun. That's the wrong way to learn the Mishnah. Amalach Ravuna, well, your key's the right key, but you got it backwards, man. It's actually the shachas, which is similar to the charuvim. And just like the charuvim, usually by the time they get to the day schools, they're inedible, so they're very hard. So after shachas is talking about where it's kashushe. And what do you mean shachas is kashushe? Shachas is never kashushe. It is, depending on what type of animal is eating it. If you're talking about Ely Zutri are young foals of donkeys. Well, those have a very difficult time eating, unless you're going to make it softer and thinner for them. So for that type of animal, which is what the Mishnah is hinting at, that it's referring to over here by mentioning it together with the carob, that I'm allowed to do, because indeed there it would be too tough. Toshma. Okay.
Is it because it's already food?
What's that?
It's relying on the fact that it already is food. I'm not turning it to food. I'm just making it more edible.
No, according to the Tanna Kamma, that's why you can't do it. According to Rabbi Yehuda, we're talking about. Reverse. Yeah. Toshma. Okay, let's see whether Ravuna can fit in to the last piece of the Mishnah, because Rabbi Yehuda says, this doesn't seem to work. Rabbi Yehuda says, you're allowed to cut up the charuvim, the way we just understood it. You can do that for a small animal. Now, that's utterly crazy. What do you mean you can do it for a small animal? If you can do it for a small animal, then you'd be saying you do it for a small animal because the small animal is basically needs it for you to make food. And so for sure you can make it for a big animal, because for a big animal, you're just being matriarch and something already is a food. Even the Rabbanan agree to that, right? So what would that mean? If the way that you understand that according to Rav Yehuda, it works out okay. I mean, the Tanna Kamma says you're not allowed to actually do anything for food that's already a food, and you can only make a food. So fine, this works out beautifully. Rabbi Yehuda is following the Shita in the Tanna Kamma the way Rav Yehuda explained it. Rav Yehuda said, well, the Tanna Kamma said that you're allowed to do something that will make it edible, but not to do something that helps it, something that's already edible. So that would explain why in that event, so Rabbi Yehuda, the Tanna comes along and says, well, actually, if you got a very small donkey foal, then basically you're making it into food because it wouldn't be able to eat it at all. But if you're going to learn it the way Ravuna is learning it, the whole thing is absolutely backwards. What's going on over here? The Tanna Kamma is saying that, look, you're not allowed to create food, but you can only be Toreach in something that already is food, right? So then when Rabbi Yehuda comes along and says, well, but in the case where it's charuvim for a young donkey foal, over there what? Over there you could be a matriarch. There's a kosher cane in the big one. You could be a matriarch where it already is food. So it doesn't make any sense. Kosher cane lagasa. The only possible thing that you could have said is that Rabbi Yehuda in the Mishnah is inverting the entire sheet of the Tanna Kamma the same way that Rabbi Yehuda does in the way he's understanding it from Ravuna. But that, as Rashi points out, doesn't make any sense, because then it just should have said Rabbi Yehuda matir. I mean, to say Rabbi Yehuda is matir because it's a young animal doesn't make sense unless he's responsive to what the Tanna Kamma was saying. But his responsiveness is only responsiveness aliba to Rav Yehuda and not aliba to Ravuna. So it doesn't make sense. It can make sense. It can make sense. I'll tell you how it can make sense. I mean, it's true. It's a little tricky, but it can make sense if you understand that the word daka doesn't mean a behema daka. Daka means midayek. Like we saw actually once before, we use it that way. So what does daka mean? Daka really means a gasa in terms of the size of the animal. The reason we call it a daka is because it chews its food very well anyway, right? So if it's choosing its food anyway, so then he's saying, since it's already food, and it would be able to eat this hard carob or shachas anyway, so all you're doing is you're making it better, which is fine. You're allowed to make it more comfortable. So then it would only be for a behema that is middaka, not a behema daka. Says the Gemara, I find it very difficult to believe that we're talking about daka is really a behema gasa, that you're calling it daka, and it's daka because it's medayek, it crushes up its food. That's a little bit crazy. I mean, look at the first part of the mission, okay? When the first part of the mission is said in the Tanna Kamma, bein daka or bein gasa, what was it referring to over there? Obviously, over there was talking about the size of the animal. It wasn't referring to how it eats. So then, I mean, if Rabbi Yehuda was referring back to the next piece of the Mishnah that the Tanakhama just commented on, in terms of Bein Gatza, Bein Daka, do you really believe that he's using the word Daka in the way opposite of the way that the Tanakhama uses it? I mean, that's really far-fetched. Yeah, well, I agree. It is a difficulty. Okay, it's kasha, but look, it's not fatal. I mean, each one was talking about a different thing. Okay, let's see whether we can actually work out Rav Yehuda in the Mishnah. Toshma. So it says in the Mishnah, which is a little bit later, that you're allowed to be mechatchin, you can cut up into small pieces a pumpkin in front of a behema. And you can cut up a nevela in front of klovim. We're going to see later on, does the nevela have to be dead before Shabbos and so on? That's a different issue. But over here we're talking about the same question, l'chora, that we have over here. So here we're talking about, obviously, it was already not connected to the ground. Otherwise, of course, you can't cut it. So the question over here is like this. Something that was miyuchet for achilas odam. I mean, certainly if you're Moshe and Gavi, you must have had pumpkin for Shabbos. It's impossible that they didn't have pumpkin. So the Shaila is, would they be allowed to feed that pumpkin to an animal? Or do we say that since it's muchan adam, it wouldn't be muchan for you to be able to give to an animal? So it says over here, you're allowed to cut it up, and you're allowed to cut up a nevela in front of a dog. Now, I mean, again, over here, the key seems to be that the two are similar to each other. So now, obviously, you want to just show us one of those pumpkins, Marcia, so we can get a better sense of how hard a pumpkin you use. There we go. So, you thought I was kidding. So, I mean, you can be sure the house will never be without a pumpkin or two here and there. So the question is, are we talking about soft pumpkins or hard pumpkins? So over here, the issue would be, well, I mean, look at the nevela. I mean, we're assuming the standard is for a nevela, which is meat. So the meat is soft. So the pumpkins we're talking about are also soft. The Mishnah is saying you're allowed to cut that up. Now, why are you allowed to cut it up? I mean, it could already eat it if it wanted to, but it's a lot easier to get a bite of a cut-up pumpkin than this whole big pumpkin, right? So Alma, tarchinan be'uchla. So you see exactly what Ravuna said. That the point of the Mishnah is that you're allowed to be terech in something that already is a foodstuff, which is a tiyufta to Rabbi Yehuda. Amalacha Rabbi Yehuda, no, I'll say the same thing that you tried telling me. It's the opposite. Actually, we're talking about an unusual situation with a nevela, in which the nevela is just as tough to eat as that pumpkin that we just saw. So, ma deluim dashune, just like pumpkins are tough, af nevela dashune, in this case, the nevela is tough. How is a nevela tough if it's just meat? Well, it could be referring to elephants. Elephant nevela. Look, Moshe, you want to bring out the elephants just so we can see them, show them? So just like the nevela, just like the pumpkins are tough, so the pile meat, elephant meat, is also tough. Or, you know what, it could be talking about just plain old regular meat, but we're talking about little newborn puppies, and little newborn puppies are going to have a tough time eating unless you cut up the nevela for them. So then it would be similar to what we said before when we're talking about the foals of the donkeys. Here we're talking about a young dog. Toshma, the Tony Rav Chana min Arda, mefarchinan teven ve'aspasta, you can crumble up the straw and the aspasta, which is the same word that we had, except one is shachas is Hebrew and aspasta is Aramaic, but it's the same idea. And because of the fact that if you wouldn't crumble them up and you would just put them down in front of the animal is smart enough to enjoy the aspasta before it eats the tevin, and it'll leave all the tevin behind and eat clean you out of asanom of aspasta. So because of that, what you want to do is you want to mix them together. Okay, so fine, so you pull them apart and so you mix them, right? Umar, and you mix them, and that way it has to eat both of them. But anyway, you see from here that you are allowed to be toreach, which is exactly what Ravuna said was the shita of the Tana Karma. No, says the Gemara, we might be talking about teven that is really not edible unless you mix it. And that would work out according to Rabbi Yehuda. So in other words, it's mutter to eat it. It's spoiled. Now, obviously, it doesn't mean spoiled the way we talked about it earlier, where over there was muktzah because it was only roy to mix with cement. We're not talking about that, as Rashi points out, but we're talking about that it's really not, doesn't smell very good. The animal's not going to want to eat it. And therefore, the way Rabbi Yehuda understood the Tanakama, you'd be allowed to mix it because dafka, you're making the food as opposed to taking an existing food and making it taste better. So that's what we're talking about over here. And what would be the case of the aspasta? The aspasta also, because we're talking again about those young foals, and because of that, I need to crumble it up a little because it's hard to eat it for them. And therefore, I need to do it for both of them in order for it to be edible. And now we don't have our Richie, but we do have our duck. And it's just that time of the week again. We did have Doc because he disappeared. No, there he is, smack bang in the middle of the whole beautiful screen. Go for it, Doc. Excellent. Einof simata gamal. Now we're talking about ways of feeding. So remember, sometimes animals are a little reluctant to overeat. And the owner wants them well stuffed, particularly if he's trying to fatten them up or if he's trying to get a big job done later, which is going to require a lot of fuel and the animal's not going to be fueled up and so on. So there are different ways in which we do that. They're the same type of general activity, but just as often we find in Lashon HaKodesh, that for the same activity, we use different words because of the applicability of the word to the species. So when we're talking about, let's say, harvesting, we have a different word for any species that we harvest. Same thing is true when we're talking about stuffing or feeding. We feed in different ways depending on the species because there's slightly different ways in which the animal will eat. So because of this, the Gemara is going to have to go through what precisely is meant by stage A or stage B feeding by animal X, Y, and Z. So we'll leave it open a little bit until we see the machlokas in the Gemara that will come to define the particularities over here. So you're not allowed to be oves agamo. That means somehow stuff it. Okay, so we're not quite sure what that means. Does it mean I use some type of mechanism to force open its throat? Do I actually push the stuff down its throat? Do I mix it with water to force it to swallow it? There's a lot of different things that could be done. We're going to have to see in the Gemara what exactly is being referred to. So you cannot do avisa. The lashon of ovsin obviously relates to avos, right? Because an avos is a feeding trough. So, I mean, it can't be a coincidence that when we're feeding the camel, we're going to refer to the feeding as the avos. Okay, so keep that in mind when we analyze the meaning of it. Below dorsin, dorsin would mean to actually push on it, but you can be mal'itin. You can put the food down into its throat. Now, remember, that's also not clear because you could put things down an animal's throat to the point where the animal cannot prevent itself from swallowing it. That would be if it's after the Beit HaBliyah. Or you could put it there so that it's tempted to swallow it, but you can't force it. It could still cough it up if it doesn't want to eat. And when it comes to agalim, so you've got calves. Ein ma'amirin et agalim, you can't fatten them up, but you can be mal'itin. Again, not clear. Mal'itin, again, means somehow to get it into their throat, but we're not sure where. Same word that we use for the camel. Mehalkitin letarnagolim. You can do some type of feeding of a tarnagol, apparently some type of force feed, but we're not sure what that is. Venotni mayim lemursan. You're allowed, when it comes to a chicken, to add water into the chicken feed. Avalogovlin, but you cannot mix it together, which would seem to be a problem of leisha, which we'll have to see. Is it leisha, something that you can't really turn into a dough, but you could certainly mix it? So if you add water, let's say, to bran, it's similar maybe to kneading, even though it doesn't really create a mix. Okay, so again, the question is this a tircha issue, or is it a chona issue? Again, not clear to us. Will the chicken not eat it without this, or will the chicken eat it just makes it easier to eat it? You don't put water in front of bees, lifnei devorim, lifnei yonim shebeshovach, or into doves that have set up house, into your own dovka. Now, we're going to see that there are a number of issues we need to take into consideration over here. One is the mizonotehem alecha? Because one of the general halachas is you're not tarchinan for a bal chai unless you are responsible for that bal chai. A bird that sets up shop in your dovka. It's not clear whether that means it's up to me, that I'm mechuyev to see to it that it has something to eat, or does it generally take care of itself? If I'm not mechuyev to take care of it because it's not dependent on me, so then I'm being toreach atircha she'eno tzorech. Now, there could be another issue. The other issue would be, is there a difference between food and water? I mean, water is generally more accessible in like little puddles or places where water is gathered. So that's a different issue. That might be even more of a tircha she'eino tzorech. Again, all to be seen in the Gemara. But notnim lifnei avazim v'tarnagolim, you can put water in front of geese, in front of chickens, and in front of yone hardesiot is one lashon. Hardesiot would be lashon of hordes, so it would be the type of bird that is what they call Herodian birds, which I'm sure Barnea is happy to tell us all about hordes and pigeons. Or some have the Lashon Hydrosian, which means that they come from a place called Hydros, and it's a different type of pigeon. But anyway, it's very strongly domesticated, and therefore it's considered to be on you and up to you. So let's take the Mishnah apart piece by piece and see what ofsin means. The thing that you're not allowed to do for a camel. What is that? Says Ravina, well, it means exactly what it says. Avos means to make its stomach into a feeding trough, essentially. In other words, you're going to feed it so much food that it's going to be able to live off of this food for a long time and eat off of its own stomach, so to speak. What, there's really such a thing? Mi'ika gai gavna, is it possible that you could put that much food into a camel's stomach? Absolutely. I once saw this myself. I saw an Arab, and he fed an entire kur to his camel. And that's 30 kav. That's a tremendous amount of stuff. And he added another one on its back that it was going to need for fuel, besides loading its back up with another few tons of stuff. And apparently, if you want the camel to be well ready for a long journey, then you have no choice but to feed it up in a way that it wouldn't be too happy about eating, but nonetheless will be able to do its job without hesitation later. Ein ma'amirin. Now, you're not allowed to do this for the agalim, but you are allowed to mal'itin. What exactly is the difference between ma'amirin and mal'itin? What is hamra'ah and what is hal'atah? Says Rav Yehuda, hamra'ah, they're basically the same thing. It's putting things down their throat, but it's a question of how far down their throat. So the hamra'ah means you put something into its throat, but it can still cough it up if it can't cough it up even if it wants to, and that's makom she'eino yachol la'achzir. Halata also means you stuck it down their throat, but there it's a makom that it could bring it back, so it could cough it up, and if it's really an obtuse animal that does not want to eat, it's going to fight you on it, and it'll be able to get it back up. Rav Chista says, no, I disagree. I think that both Hamra'ah and Halata refer to getting the food too far back in the throat for the animal to cough up. And the difference is that the Hamra'ah, which we said you're not allowed to do, that's referring to using a type of kli. That would be like a spatula of some kind that you force the food down. And Halata means you put it down by hand. And that, the Mishnah is saying, is mutter. So it was according to Rav Yehuda, you cannot put the food all the way back for it not to be able to bring back up. According to Rav Chista, you can. The only difference is, according to Rav Kisi, you cannot use a kli, but you could do it with your yad. So the question is, according to Rav Yehuda, we've got a problem, says Rav Yosef, from a brisa, because the brisa says, Mahal kitin latanagolim, ve'in sorach lo mashem malkitim latanagolim. So mahal kitin would mean that whatever that leket is, getting the chicken to pick everything up, you're getting it to do it. Mahal kitin. In other words, you're putting it in a position where it's got sort of, seems to be no choice. And it's going to be force-fed. So that's mahal kitin. And for sure you can feed them if it wouldn't be force-fed. Okay, we're not clear about what the darga is here of each one of them. In either case is not the normal way of feeding. It's one of them just seems to be more of a powerful force feeding than the other one is. However, when it comes to the Yonei Shovach and Yonei Aliyah that live upstairs in the roof, so over there you are not allowed to be even Malkit. For sure you're not allowed to really force feed them. Now, I know I didn't explain it, says the bride, so let me explain it to you now. What do I mean by Mahalkatin and what do I mean by Malkitin? So now, if you're going to tell me, we're trying to understand the bride here, I'll leave it to Rebuta. If you're going to tell me that Mahalkatin is the type of force feed that is done with your hand, you put it down their throat, and Malkitim would just mean feeding them, throwing food in front of them, that wouldn't make any sense at all, because then it would be saying that if it's talking about Yonei Shavach and Yonei Aliyah, you're not even allowed to throw food in front of them. Why are you not allowed to throw food in front of them? You're not doing anything. You're basically allowing them to take the food. I mean, that doesn't make any sense. Why would we not be allowed to put food there without any tircha? Elalav, so that can't be what it means. It's got to be saying that Mahal Katin means slamming it down its throat, which is usher if it's in a place where it can no longer bring up that food if it wants to. And Malkitin means it's going to have a hard time, but it will be able to bring the food back up and spit it out at you. So then that would mean that the Brisa is saying that you are allowed to force feed the chicken. As well, I mean, let's say you can use a kli. You can't use a kli. But you can force feed the chicken with your hand. And that's mashma, that if we're going to contrast it with hamra'ah, then that's got to be even worse, which would mean that I'm using it as a kli. And that's the opposite of the way Rav Yehuda learned. Rav Yehuda said, I can't do it not with the yad or with a kli, because I only can put it in a place where I can bring it back up again. But we showed that that doesn't make sense, because then when it's telling you that you're not allowed to do it, it's telling you you're not even allowed to sprinkle food in front of them. Does that make sense for Yonei Hardisios? Says Rav Yehuda, yes, it does make sense. Absolutely. I'm telling you that Mahalkatin, of course, only means with your hand. Malkitin means just throwing it in front of you. Now you ask, so what's so terrible? What's so terrible? Why couldn't I throw it in front of them? Well, I'll explain it to you very simply. When you were asking, I mean, what would be so bad about throwing food in front of Yonei Aliyah and Yonei Shavach? What? The Mishta Kamayo Namilo? I will tell you that's right, my friends. If you have something that you are not responsible for on Shabbos, you do not do tircha to feed them. I don't care whether it's not a lot of tircha. It's not your business to be spreading food basically for wild birds. These birds are not mezonotein malecha. Vehani en mezonotein malecha. So that's the difference. When we're talking about chickens or geese, we're talking about things that you do have responsibility to feed. And these things you do not, which means if you're not chayev, according to Rav Yehuda, you cannot feed the animal. And it's interesting, this seems to be true from a braita, fascinating braita. The braita says you're allowed to put food in front of a dog, not even your own dog, any dog. But you cannot put mizonot lifnei hachazir. You cannot, on the other hand, put food in front of a pig. I mean, what's the difference? My fresh benzel is that. The difference is that the dog, as we'll see, even if it doesn't, it's not your particular dog, we're going to see why this is true later, the din is that that dog is dependent on you for its food. Masha Enkein, the piggy is not dependent on you for food because you are not supposed to be raising piggies. And we remember we have a klala. Oror isha megalo, a megalo chazir beveito. That was one of the terrible things that happened during the wars of the Chashmonaim and so on. So Mamela, we take a look at the relationship of this, the way we're understanding this. You can't put things in front of something that you're not responsible for. And as Rav Ashi says, take a look at the Mishnah. We don't have to go look at the Braita. The Mishnah makes this very, very clear. Now, what is the reason for this difference? I mean, I can only think of one difference. I don't know, maybe you can come up with something. It seems pretty clear to me that it's because Lav mishum da'ani mizonotem alecha, v'ani ein mizonotem alecha. But what are the differences between them, between the geese and the chicken and the other kind of doves, right? Says the Gemara. So then how do you explain the fact that it mentions water? How come it only mentions water? It should be talking about food of any kind. If you're right, mayari maya, afilo chiti misari namilo. So obviously there's a difference. As we pointed out in the Mishnah, water is more accessible. So shiny maya the shkicha ba'agma. So it could very well be that the Mishnah does not hold of your general din that anything that's not mizonotem alecha is not allowed to be given. It just may simply be saying that if an animal cannot take care of itself, so then because of that, you would be allowed to benogea things that it cannot take care of itself. It can. Don't get worried about Reb Yonah's name being Reb Yonah. So anyways, the Reb Yonah was there, and he was talking right in front of the Beit HaNasim, and he said, what does it mean? This, of course, was triggered by a conversation about doggies. And it turns out that there actually is a mitzvah to take care of a dog, even though it's not your own dog. And that's because we find that Shlomo HaMelech points out that Yodea Tzadik Din Dalim, a tzaddik knows how it is that the poor suffer. This is a reference to HaKadosh Baruch Hu's rachamim on the Briyas. Yodea HaKadosh Baruch Hu bekelev shebizonotav muatim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows that dogs, like we talk about, it shouldn't happen to a dog. People mistreat dogs. People don't give them food. They're not generally attracted to an animal that follows them around and keeps wanting stuff for them and so on. So because of that, they got a problem. Everybody's running around feeding the cats, you know. Nobody feeds the dogs. So because of that, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who knows that it's difficult for a dog to get enough nourishment, because of that, we find that a dog can take up to 3 days before it finishes digesting its food. And we know that this is true from a Mishnah. The Mishnah over here talks about the question of particular cases where an animal eats a mace. And then the Shaila is, does the basar of the mace have a din of basar a mace to be metame when the animal would die so that it's no longer baluar when it excretes the mace? So the question over there, what would be the din? So there it says, So the din is 3 24-hour periods when it comes to a dog, but where it's talking about birds or fish, the time is instantaneous. In other words, oxidation in terms of digestion and oxidation in terms of falling into a fire is exactly the same. So obviously, we see that the dog takes a longer time to digest. Because of that, says Ravunish Mamina. So you see from here that if HaKadosh Baruch Hu was makbid to care for the dog and to see to it that despite the way it's mistreated, it should be able to survive, it's a derech eretz thing to throw a little piece of meat to a dog. So when you're eating, don't let the dog go away without food. I mean, how much, what are we talking about over here? I mean, a little bit. Amar of Mori, Mishach Udne, give it a piece of meat that's about the size of its own ear, and then take a stick and whack it to get it out of there, because otherwise you'll never get rid of it. So it's all very nice to feed it, but don't be overly giving, okay? But this is only if you're outdoors. I mean, Anim Ilabidabra, if you're in a town, you'll never get rid of it, because once you gave it food, it's going to be following you all the time. It'll be mafsid you, break into the house, break into your yard, open the garbage pail, and there you don't want to get into that. There you shouldn't give it to him. Da'at al Misrach. Omer of Papa, Les Dania Mikalba, there's no thing that is as poor as a poor dog, and there's no thing that is richer than a piggy. They get everywhere. They get into everything. People feed them like they're a walking garbage pail, and they serve as a garbage disposal for everything. And these things are really always have fun. Anyway, getting back to the Machlokas and the Mishnah. So finally, we have a brisa that actually is mashma, exactly like Rav Yehuda says. And that when we're talking about the force feeding, the force feeding is talking about even with your hand, but only to the point where it won't be able to cough it up again. And what you're allowed to do is where it can get it back up again. And this would be like the Braitza says, what is called hamra'a and what is called hal'ata. So hamra'ta would mean that you actually put the animal down, marbitza, you force its mouth open, Marbitza ufokeset pia, and then ma'achila kashinim u'mayim bevatachat, so that you can feed it a mixture of its fodder that is mixed with water at the same time, and that way it can't spit it out because it's a liquid and it just slips down its throat. Whereas hal'ata, which we were saying was already, was talking about standing up. Over there, ma'achila mu'umad, and separately, you give it water when it's standing. You don't force its mouth open. You give the kashina bifnei atzmam, the mayim bifnei atzmam, and so therefore, obviously, you're not going to be able to stuff it down very strongly for it not to be able to spit it up again. And then when we were talking about the chickens, we said you're allowed to put the food in mahalkatin, and you can even put water into the morsan, but you don't mix the morsan together with the mayim. So now the question is, Omar Abaye, Amrita Kameda Mars, I said this over in front of Rav Yosef, and I said, Masnisim Mani, the Mishnah must be going like, because the Mishnah says that if you're pouring water into it, it's not a problem of Lisha, because you didn't do an act of Lisha, so the Mishnah is saying it's okay to just mix water into it. Now, that, I thought we had a big problem about that earlier in the Masechet. So he said to me that it's actually referring to Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda. Because in the case where we had one person bringing flour and the other person brings the water, so the din over there was that Rebbe said the guy who puts in the water is going to be chayav just for putting in water. And that itself is considered to be lisha. Masha Einkein with Yosef Rabbi Yehuda says, no, nobody's chayev. You're only chayev on Lisha when you do the actual kneading. I mean, why is that Lisha, just putting in water? So, eno chayev achi gabel. And therefore, in this case, the Mishnah is talking about, apparently, what Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda said, that if all I'm doing is putting mayim into the morsan, then there's no problem of Lisha, because I didn't do anything. So, I say, well, maybe not. Maybe Kemach. I mean, there's a big difference over there. The case over there in the Machlokas between Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda and Rebbe was talking about where the normal way that you would mix kemach would be to really make it into a dough and knead it well, right? But maybe even Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda would be made that if you're talking about morsan, there's nothing else that you can do. So morsan, which is not really something that you could turn into a dough, it's lav bar gibel. So then maybe according to him, it would be, in this case, it would be also, that's as close as you're going to get things to stick. It's not going to turn into a dough. This is more impossible. It says beferish and a brighter, not like that. It says, ein notni mayim lemursan, Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda, that's divrei Rabbi, and Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda, menoshe mayim lemursan. So we see clearly the machlok is Rabbi and Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda, applies exactly the same to the case of the Mursan and the Mayim as it does to the Kemach and the Mayim. Nothing else to discuss. Now, when it comes to Koli, so Koli, you will recall, is roasted grains. That's the Lechem Koli, the Carmel. And the reference over here is to Koli that is ground up then to make Kemach Shokloyot. And Kemach Shokloyot is much tougher. It's more of like a candy kind of thing, a puffed grain. And that says over here, you cannot mix it with water. And some say you can. So now, who is this? So man yesh omri. Omer of Chista, the Yesh Omer that we're talking about over here, directly relates to the sugya that we just brought. It's Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda says, if you just put in water, it's not considered to be a case of kneading. And I just want you to know that the only way that he's matir lechatchila, now there's a difference between what you're allowed to do even lechatchila, he's matir lechatchila, only if you change a little bit from the way that you would normally do it. And this is the way that we pass can actually hear with these cases. And what would that mean? Omer of Chista, only do a tiny bit at a time so that you do al yad, al yad. Because normally you would do a lot at a time, and over here you just do enough for what you need to eat now, and that would be considered enough of a shinui.